Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, we are going to be focusing on the energy sector as we are chatting with Joseph Schachter, founder and president of the Schachter Energy Report, also writes the Eye on Energy, which is a free newsletter that Joseph sends out that covers really the macro drivers and breaks down the reports that come out of the energy sector. Joseph, let's start off with the oil price. And look, we've had you on the show for really this whole year, I feel like, and we've been waiting for this correction in crude, but crude right now is breaking out to some levels we haven't seen in a couple of years. Now, the fact of the matter is I keep on hearing so much about a supply crunch, and that's what's keeping the energy or the oil price higher. What do you have to say about this whole narrative that there is a supply crunch and oil could go even higher than it is currently?
The consensus of the bulls is that there's a supply crunch and that there's not enough oil in the system and that, you know, OPEC only bringing on 400,000 barrels a day is not enough and that demand is going to go from 97 million barrels in the summer to 99-100 by the end of this year. And that will be at record demand in Q1 of 2022. My problem with that is there's a lot of oil in the system. OPEC is bringing on 400,000 barrels a day, which will mean 2 million barrels before the end of the year. The U.S. production numbers are coming up, and we can go into detail on that in a few minutes. And more importantly, there's no problem in terms of inventories in countries, in refineries, and in storage, both the commercial stocks and in the SPR, Strategic Petroleum Reserves, that everyone has, U.S., China, Europe, etc. It's the problem where the refiners are having a problem getting the oil or, you know, the gasoline, the diesel, the products, propane, etc., from the refinery to the consumers. And, for example, we've seen a lot of concern in Europe, especially the U.K., where the petrol stations are running out of product. They've been limited people to buy only 30 pounds worth every time they go in. The issue there is not enough trucks to drive from the refinery to the local station. And so the UK government is now approving 5,000 special visas to bring back the workers that used to be there from Europe, bringing them back in under special visas, 5,000 to drive the lorries from the refinery to the petrol stations. And they're mobilizing the logistics of the military for them to go and take the products from the refineries with the military trucking to the areas that are needing it. So I think that it will be resolved. One of the other wild cards of the issue of electricity and why, you know, natural gas prices have skyrocketed is, you know, coal prices, of course, have taken off to create electricity. But the wild card, which I find most fascinating, is that wind has stopped in the North Sea and in Spain and many other countries in Europe. And so if you don't have the wind power, which renewables, so much money has been spent on renewables for onshore and offshore wind, and all of a sudden there's no wind, you got a problem. And so the demand then goes to coal and natural gas to create electricity for the air conditioning season. And of course, you know, we're now past that summer driving season, so demand should back off. And then the big thing is going to be when we get to winter, is there enough supply? One other additional thing that is just a new item is the German elections, where the Green Party and the other party that might join with the minority government that's in place to create a government, they are against the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. And so until a deal is done and the Nord Stream comes on, massive increases of natural gas from Russia don't arrive to Germany and don't arrive to the continent.
Yeah, Joseph, it's interesting what's going on with some of the natural gas power plants and their need to have them on the grid to fill in for when the renewables aren't working, like when there's no wind. So that's going to be interesting to follow along with. Well, let's shift over to some of the changes where there was also a deficit for a while in a number of areas of the market, and now the builds have really picked up with U.S. production. It was down more than a million barrels per day over the last couple of weeks, but then last week we saw a report where there was over 10 million barrels per day, and that 84% of the Gulf of Mexico oil producers are now back after the hurricane. We've also seen builds in gasoline and distillates. What do you make of the change from being kind of in a deficit to now being in a build environment?
Yeah, seasonally, historically, September, October, November, you have builds. If you go back pre-pandemic, 2019, 2018, 2017, historically, you get builds of 2 to 3 million barrels on a week. If you get a number 4 or 5 million barrels on a week, then that usually has negative implications for the price of crude oil. So last week, we got an increase of 4.6 million barrels in commercial crude stocks. The estimate was it was going to be another decline of 2.5 million. So that was a surprise. And the bulls are saying it's an aberration and, it's not going to stay and we're going to go back down with declines again. I don't buy that because the seasonality usually for the next 2 months is builds. The other one is that total stocks went up by 10.9 million barrels. That to me is a shocking number. Like, you know, if you had a build in commercial crude stocks because of lower demand and the refinery utilization is risen from 87.5 to 88.1, and the 88.1 is above 2 years ago pre-pandemic, which was 86.4. So refineries are running because, of course, all the problems they had on the Gulf Coast, those refineries are back on and they're producing product, but you still had a build. So the key thing was the production in the States came back on 500,000 barrels a day, you know, times seven, that's 3.5 million. So of the 4.6, 3.5 came from increase in U.S. Gulf Coast production. And the other part of it is demand fell by 754,000 barrels. That's the other part of the build, which creates a 10.9 million. So if we have weaker demand, which could get down to 18 or 19 million during the next couple of weeks, because of the fall season and maybe high prices and the COVID concerns in the States, and at the same time you have another few hundred thousand barrels come on in the U.S., I think we're looking at builds on a regular basis here, and that won't be an aberration, and that will be where the question mark for the bulls comes in. And I think after one or two more builds, we're going to be looking at $60 prices and maybe even sub-60 later this year.
So, Joseph, when it comes to different countries that have an impact on the energy or oil sector in particular, it's a lot of OPEC or OPEC Plus, as they are called, and the U.S. with their really variety and volatility in the rigs and the amount of oil that that country pumps. What do you think is going to be crucial to look for out of either of these countries or any other countries that could change any of these numbers, could change the build, could change that supply and demand dynamic here?
Well, the first is the U.S. I think with the rig count is really up sharply. U.S. rig count right now is 521 as of last Friday's Baker Hughes run. That's up from 261 rigs a year ago, so it's up 100%. In Canada, the rig count is 162, up 8 on the week. The U.S. was up 9 last week from 71 in Canada a year ago, up 128%. And so the rig count means you're drilling more, which means you're going to, you know, the guys are going to want to not spend money if they're not going to bring the wells on. So they're going to frack them and bring them on because they want that production on. And the biggest increase in the U.S. spending is coming not from the public companies that are being forced or pushed by shareholders to return money to shareholders either by dividends or stock buybacks. It's private companies that are saying, hey, services are cheap, land is cheap, workers are available, let's drill like drill baby and get the production up sharply. And when these conventional companies are not being pressured as much for shareholder returns, but to people go back to saying, well, are you growing? And the push comes from Wall Street and Bay Street to grow your volumes, not just not just stand still, which can happen very quickly. If you have $50-$60 sustainable prices and balance sheets are repaired, then I think we're going to see maybe 12 million or more per barrels versus the, let's say, the 11.1 we had this week. I think we're going to be 12 million barrels sometime before the end of the year. So you have 900,000 barrels there. You've got OPEC bringing on 2 million more barrels. The Iran question mark is if they, you know, if they ever get a deal, there's another million or two. So the key thing you have to remember is OPEC, even today, has got 7 to 8 million barrels of spare capacity. And the biggest spare capacity is Saudi Arabia, but it's Kuwait, it's Iraq, and it's UAE. If those guys decide under pressure from, you know, President Xi and President Biden to increase the production and bring oil prices down, because paying, you know, $5 a gallon in California and close to $4 in most of America is not popular. And of course, the problems that China has. And, you know, China says, okay, if you know, we're going to take production from our reserves, strategic reserve, and we're not going to buy oil from you. We're already seeing Saudi Arabia lowering the price by $1 a barrel to get interest to buy Asian buyers. But the thing to consider is that if the Asian contagion spreads from China, countries that do a lot of supply chain deliveries to China are going to lose business, which means their demand for crude oil is going to go down, Vietnam, Korea, Taiwan, etc. So to me, it's like a domino on the demand side, which I think is going to knock down demand more than people think. The bulls are not even considering that. And you're looking at more production coming on by the U.S. and by the pressure by the major industrialized countries on OPEC to increase production greater than the 2 million barrels they're talking about. And then we have a wild card of Iran.
Well, Joseph, there's definitely a lot of balls in the air as far as the supply-demand situation, and nothing like higher prices to inspire everybody to get drilling and get producing more into these high prices. But let's pivot over into the companies now. There's also an interesting phenomenon that's coming up. Last year with the pandemic crash, a lot of companies were forced to hedge short-term over 12 months, 18 months, and some of those hedges are going to be rolling off over the next quarter or two. Do you think that's going to change the dynamics on the balance sheet of a lot of these companies as those hedges roll off and we still have these higher prices? And what's your outlook there?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the hedges in many cases were put on when the price of oil was $30 or $40 a barrel. So if you even come down to, you know, $60, you know, and you don't have hedges, the cash flows of the companies are going to be materially higher, and they won't be taking hedge losses. Like if you pull out any of the companies from Q2, a majority of them, especially the oily names, had significant hedge losses during the quarter. Hedge losses will probably be significant still in Q3, but less so than Q2, and then Q4 could be the first green light where companies will not have big hedge losses, and the cash flows per BOE will go up. The market is looking at that annualization of cash flows in Q4 without the hedge losses and saying the companies have gone from 3x debt to cash flow to under 1.5x debt to cash flow. There's no problem. And if you saw, you know, InPlay yesterday made an acquisition and got an increase in their debt line because the cash flows that they're bringing on are significant enough to the debt to cash flow with the increased production they're bringing on grows the company sufficiently that the debt load is not difficult for them to handle. So I think that, you know, we're looking at a totally different world of numbers in Q4. Maybe more so in Q1, but if we have you know, a financial calamity, you know, from this start of the domino effect because of Evergrande, I think we could see sub $60 WTI, and then maybe some of these companies will have to put some hedges on just to protect the balance sheet and the interest payments, and the banks probably will require that for heavily indebted companies. And I think that the market right now is factoring in $70, $75 WTI with no hedge issues. You take off 10, 15 bucks from that, and you've got a problem. And these stocks are mainly, on the oily names, very overvalued.
All right, Joseph, we're going to wrap it up there. Thanks for your insight. Still hanging out, waiting for that pullback in the oil price. And boy, oh boy, oil sure has been resilient. Even that short-term correction that we got that started in July only lasted for about a month and a half and then rebounded right back up to this mid-70s level. So we're going to follow up with you here, Joseph, in about another month, but we'll see if anything changes in that time. Thanks, as always, for your time, Joseph. Have a great rest of your week.
My pleasure. Take good care.